We want our kids to know their grandparents in a really compelling way, in a really intimate way. We want the grandparents to be on the seat of wisdom for our kids. We want them to be constantly around, constantly at the head of the table, constantly sharing wisdom, constantly being asked stories.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Ann Wilson.
And I'm Dave Wilson, and you can find us at familylifetoday.com or on our Family Life app.
This is Family Life
Today. So when you think about the family I grew up in,
okay.
What do you think? What's the first word that comes to your mind?
Dysfunction. Is that bad? Is that your feeling?
Two alcoholic parents, dad leaves when I'm seven, abuse.
Yeah.
You name it, right?
It
so what do you think
sad.
Of your family? What do you think?
Oh. Great people, fun. That's what I think of.
Yeah, and I always thought perfect.
Oh, and I didn't because I lived there.
But then I got in that family. I'm like, every family's sort of messed up, and including even the one we've been
leading. And we didn't have any faith in our family growing up.
And our family isn't the only family that needs help. Every family, really.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's why we exist at Family Life Today, is to bring help and hope to your family. And I tell you what, as we come to year end, we need your help to help our family help your family, you know, with joining us as a prayer partner, but especially even now as a financial partner, as you make a donation to Family Life as part of your year end giving. It will impact not only your family, but other families that you love and care about.
And Dave, I think the thing I love about this too, because like as a woman, I'm a shopper. And when you...
Yes, she is.
And if you're able to help us with that year-end donation, we would love to send you a thank you gift, not only one, but two. And one of them is this cool new devotional. I wish you could see the book because it's beautiful. It's green. Like a man would love it. A woman would love it. By Dane Ortlund. And it's titled In the Lord I Take Refuge. And it's a daily devotional that goes through the Psalms. But along with it,
you'll get the playing cards, which are conversation starters. So you get the play cards and have a conversation.
Yeah, it's actually a deck of cards and it has questions on it. This is super fun because it will open up conversations around the table.
I can see how excited you're getting. It's crazy. So we're no longer going to play cards. We're just going to have more marriage talks.
It's be fun.
No, anyway, those are gifts that we're going to send to you as you give a gift to Family Life. And you can do that right now if you'd like at familylifetoday.com, or you can call us at 1-800-FL-TODAY. Man, oh man, we would value your partnership with us to take this ministry into more homes like yours. And we're grateful for you considering us prayerfully and financially to join us. So speaking of family, we've got Jefferson Becky with us today. Welcome to Family Life, Jefferson.
Excited to be back with you guys. We were just talking about how, being with you guys last year was a blast, so it's fun to be here.
You thought a lot about family, and I've just read your book, Take Back Your Family, the subtitle from the Tyrants of Burnout, Busyness, Individualism, and the Nuclear Ideal.
Oh, it's a fun subtitle.
Well, let's play a little game. Here's what I do. I'm going to read you a quote about family. Tell me if you think you know who it is. Famous actor.
Okay.
He said, family is not an important thing, it's everything.
Oh, famous actor?
I'll give you initials. MJF.
Oh, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Nice.
Of course.
Well, I love him because I'm a Back to the Future guy.
I was going to say, guarantee Back to the Future.
Him.
One, two, three.
Okay, so he gets a big prize for that one.
Yeah, yeah. So Michael J. Fox, but also Back to the Future. Like, I'm obsessed.
So Jefferson, I mean, a lot of people know you because we stumbled across you. I don't know how old you were when Jesus Over Religion
came
out.
Yeah, 10 years ago, so like 22 or something,
Yeah, so I mean, first we saw the video online and then you wrote the book and you're a New York Times bestselling author. You've written several different things. But, oh, and we should say this, married?
Yep.
How many years?
Married to Alyssa 9 years, 3 kids. Kinsley, who's in the room behind me, 7. Middle kid, Cannon, who's 5. Lucy, who's our youngest, age 2. And we got a dog named Aslan, too, because we're Narnia fans.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yep.
Well, talk about Take Back Your Family. It's more than just take back. There's a passion.
Yeah, 100%.
That you carry about this whole idea of family. Talk about that.
Essentially, our family's kind of story got captured by another family's story. You know what I mean? About 10 years ago, 9 years ago now, me and Alyssa or so it would have been 8 years ago because we were just married. We were in Jerusalem and we were visiting some friends of ours. They're a family from Cincinnati, but they were splitting time for business reasons in Jerusalem and Cincinnati because of the business he ran. And they were just starting to unfold themselves, or they had been the last 10 years up until that moment, unfolding themselves into a lot of these traditions that, you know, would be traditionally Jewish, but, you know, through some conversations and the relationships that they've had, essentially were convinced that, yeah, hey, like, we're Christian, we're evangelical, we love the Lord, but he was a Jewish guy. Let's just pay attention to some of these things that are going on. You know what I mean? And kind of, he always calls himself the wild olive shoot branch, you know what I mean? Which is what Romans says, like, you know, yeah. We're the wild cousin, where it's like, you don't have to adopt it all. It's not a law, but we get to kind of be crazy and grab some and leave some, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just noticed because of that, their family was just radically different, just in how they loved each other, how they served each other. You have teenagers that are just, you know what I mean? Like, for the Lord, honoring and respecting them, staying in on Friday nights because they want to be with the family. And so I talk about this idea of Sabbath in the first chapter of this, you know, being at a traditional Shabbat dinner with this family, three generations, storytelling. And I was just kind of, there was a struck of like, this is weird, first of all.
Yeah.
You haven't seen that
yeah,
here.
It wasn't really that magical yet. It was more like, this is weird. Then it was like, wow, this is also deeply compelling. Like, something here feels right, feels kind of interesting. And so through that chain of events, kind of started pulling back the curtain on like just asking him why. And I remember saying, hey, why do you do family so different and weird? And he just was like, he pushed back and he's like, we don't do family different and weird. He's like, the Western American culture does family different and weird. You get before 1850 outside of the West, and almost every family across all time has been doing a lot of these things. They're all multi-generational. They all kind of center economic activity in the home, or at least in the home, pushing then out of the home. Like, if you were to go into the DeLorean, Back to the Future reference, go back 200 years, and you were to just ask someone, what, like, give me your picture of an ideal family, or just you say the word family, like, what comes up in your mind? Most people would immediately back then probably think of 23 people, 25 people. You got three generations, you got next door, you got the aunt and the uncle, you probably have four or five employees that are kind of circling around that home as well in regards to apprenticing and serving and all these different types of things. Now, if you ask someone what family is today, we say four people, mom, dad, kid, you know, a boy and a girl, and maybe a dog and a white picket fence. Those are just radically different visions of family. And so that's essentially kind of that premise I start with, and it all kind of, then I kind of just do my style of book writing after that. It's just like, why, what, when, where, you know, research and stuff like that.
We actually wrote a book called Vertical Marriage, and then so we did a vertical marriage tour of the Holy Land. We did what you just said, the Shabbat dinner in a family's home.
It was powerful.
It was incredible. Yeah. And I came home, I told Dave, we are doing that every Sunday. We're going to have this meal, and we did it once.
Yeah.
Well, talk about why we did it once.
Yeah.
I mean, because I don't think we're that unique.
No,
I mean,
at all.
The Wilsons did it once, but I bet a lot of families are like, that's something. I mean, when you're sitting in that home, there was almost this aroma. You're like, why am I resonating with what's happening here?
Yeah.
We need to recreate that. And you, in the early parts of your book, you're saying, here's what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
There's been a journey that the family's gone on. Talk about that.
Most families, when they start getting into wanting to implement wisdom for their own family based on a breakdown or something compelling they saw they want to implement, we tend to bite off more than we can chew, right? And so then we kind of jump in on the deep end rather than just kind of slowly building a house, right? But I think that what that does is that shows it kind of is a smoke signal of our own vision of family. Again, if God's vision for family is a 500-year multi-generational project with your last name and your kids, like Deuteronomy says it is, well, then you can chill out and you got some time to implement. But if you have a Western mind that's linear in time, where if you miss a moment, there's no going back, well, then you're going to always feel this pressure and also stop doing something the minute you miss it, right? It's kind of, and so it actually comes down to your philosophy of time. I know it's a weird way to put it. There's three kind of visions of time, right? There's the Eastern vision of time, the Western vision of time, and the biblical vision of time. The Eastern picture of time is essentially just a circle, where time is meaningless, meaning it's not going anywhere, it's not pushing anywhere, it just goes in the same. So we would get, that's like reincarnation, right? Just kind of like life is meaningless, you're a cog in the wheel. We'd be more the Western vision of time. The Western vision of time is the opposite, where it's a straight line. So it's like there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's no rhythm, there's no cadence, but there's also no going back. There's no season, there's no nothing. It's just like a rocket ship. Like, it's just like shooting out until you die. And that's why we also live our lives based on bucket lists, because when you believe time's a straight line, then you need to start putting those things in there to check them off.
Yeah,
right? And that is the average American 100%. Family. Yeah.
100%. We, you know, all of us, that's just the air we breathe, right?
Right.
Yeah. And even, I do think we worship the time in the West. And so it's not a coincidence that our hearts feel like kind of the stopwatch, right? Just like clicking and ticking and the anxiety and all that. But the biblical view of time is a little bit of a blend between the two, but also neither of the two, where it's a spiral pointed forward. So a spiral kind of goes forward, but then comes back, goes forward, that comes back, but it's also progressing. And so that vision of time leads to what I call kind of progressive being. Like you start to actually form an identity and renew yourself around a certain practice. And so that's what I talk about in the book where, you know, living in what we call 7-day rhythms is actually probably the biggest superpower a family can do is believing that God gave you 7 days. And if you kind of perfect that, like if you perfect 7 days, you perfect a life essentially. And we're not trying to be perfect, but you know what I mean? Like when you can kind of steward 7 days, then you can steward an entire life. So yeah, there's a lot of tangents there, but that was one thing I thought of with that is that when you just start there, then you lose the pressure because you're like, oh, I get to go forward, but come back again, try again, go forward, but come back again, right? And it's about more about compound interest, essentially. It'd be almost a metaphor for it.
Yeah, and you said your friend that was talking to you about how they live in Israel said, well, when you peel back the curtain, you start to understand what's happened to the family.
Yes.
So talk about what has happened.
Yeah. So I alluded to it earlier, but yeah, there's a lot of jumps that I would say the West has taken. The couple that I highlight, because there's more than these, obviously, the Industrial Revolution was a pretty significant one, right? So there's been a couple of Industrial Revolutions, depending on what we're talking about. But let's just say like late 1700s, you know, mid 1800s, that around that time, and all the way actually to about 1900, when like the assembly line and Henry Ford and stuff like that. But that 100 or so years, like, I don't think we realized the implications that had in the sense of, okay, work before that was very agrarian. Not necessarily agricultural, but it was very trade-based. So it was very apprentice-based. Families kind of had their own businesses. You were a blacksmith family, a bread-making family, whatever. And then essentially because the scale of production and warehouses and the Industrial Revolution, we then started needing to produce more. And so then we did that by pulling all the fathers out of the home and sticking them in a warehouse and saying, okay, if you go here, then we can kind of get to this scale and this efficiency and all these different things we like. But what we don't realize that did is that didn't just take the father's presence out. It did two things. It took the father's presence out of the home and kind of broke that dance that was happening in the home, you know, where he's gone most of the day.
And whereas then, before the sons or the daughters, they're working alongside.
Yes. And it wasn't just like the dad hung out and watched TV back then, you know what I mean, either. Like the dad was working, but there was like a symbiotic kind of dancing relationship. That's also too, by the way, why a lot of us feel like children, like the minute you someone in the West is having another kid, like, oh, you find out you're pregnant, you immediately feel anxiety. But 200 years ago, they immediately celebrated because to us, it's a drain, right? Mm-hmm. To us, it's like, because we're a consumption-based world because of the Industrial Revolution.
I got to go make more money.
You got to make more money now to feed that mouth. Yeah. When 200 years ago, they celebrated because we have another employee. Mm. Right? No, seriously, that's what it was.
Like, sure.
That's why they had average 10 kids because they, to them, they needed those workers. Now we could even say there's problems with that.
Yeah.
Sure. But I'm saying it's a different model. It's a different model when to us, you know, we see kids as consumers, kind of sucking the life and money and resources out of us, rather than, I would say, the biblical model is more kids as actually contributors to the team. Like that God is actually gifting you with certain personalities and wirings and filling gaps in your team by giving you the gift of children that you want to try to study and pay attention to and inflame so that you can kind of go on God's mission, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and so you also talk about, you get the Industrial Revolution, you got, one of your chapter titles was like what Sears did to the family.
Yeah, that was
like,
my favorite chapter.
What in the world is that about?
Yeah, that was my favorite chapter, actually. I love, because I love just like research and all the random stuff, you know? And so that one was, the quick version of that is essentially Sears, a lot of people realize this, but Sears was like the Amazon before the Amazon, right? So 100 years ago, the Sears and Roebuck catalog was like massive. It was like, I think it weighed a couple pounds, right? And
they would mail. Had one.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, your parents had one.
Yeah. I mean, and they were around for a long time, obviously. But around the turn of the century, I think it was around like 1920, maybe 1930, they started to do these mail order home kits where you could actually literally like fill out in the catalog that you wanted this home from the picture, and a train car would show up with like a waxed seal on it that you would break and open, and it would just be a complete DIY house with instructions, the exact count of nails that you need, the exact, you know, 2x4s you need.
It's like IKEA as a home.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Except what was also crazy is these homes are actually like really good material and really well made, which is crazy. It shows you like the average craftsmanship of like a person back then is crazy. But yeah, and so, but where I talk about that in the book though, why it's important is, you know, when you dig into kind of Sears' reasons for doing those, they basically were wanting to build their business and they were seeing that families live multi-generationally. And so what would mostly happen is someone would get married and then they would kind of like build on like a little apartment on the back of the home, right? Or something, kind of like make like almost a triplex back then. And Sears was like, basically they had a light bulb moment of like, hey, we can create more customers if we just kind of start advertising and convincing people that they need to like have their own home. And so they were actually one of the early people to kind of have that mantra of like, when you get married, it's the ideal of success to have your own home, take out a mortgage, all these different types of things, right? And I just talk about how like the subtle implications of that are that we no longer live multi-generationally, right? Not that Sears is the only one to blame, but they're actually a massive part of the cultural shift. And so it wasn't just because we think, oh, like to me, I just say like, think about that. Like, it's not because it was a really good reason. Like we don't not live generationally anymore because like, oh, it's not, you know, we want our privacy or whatever. We can say those things now. Realistically, we just were consumers that got advertised really well. And then now we're just kind of like down the river, you know?
I would say most of us have never heard of that.
Yeah.
Don't you
no,
think?
No, I never heard of it.
They're thinking biblically,
it.
We want to launch our kids.
Yes,
and
the leave and cleave and all that stuff, totally.
So let's talk about that. Yeah. Should we be living with our parents?
Yeah. No, so the fun part about this book, it's part of under a ministry called Family Teams that we've been doing for the last couple of years with our mentors. And we have a couple thousand people, you know, in our membership program and some of these other things. So we get to kind of see the like Petri dish and the experiments of how people are living this out. And so, yeah, and so that's a common question. It's like, oh, does this just mean, you know, we should live together? I would say no, by the way. But what we say is, but you should hold the value of the word we use is integration. So of course we can't go back to 1850. Of course we can't all be farmers, all the different types of stuff, right? And it's like what Wendell Berry says, one of my favorite authors, where he's like, we can no longer basically, we are an industrialized society, but you can now bring an agrarian spirit to your living. You know, you're not just gonna go get a farm. He's like, but you can bring the spirit of a farm to your work.
What's that look like?
I think just like more rhythmic, more living with cadence, turning off your phone, living in the seasons, whatever it is. But like farms operate on that context, right?
Yeah.
Farms have to submit to seasons.
Right.
But we don't because we have electricity and this and job, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like thinking about it almost like a metaphor that helps put you in a certain season. But yeah, so then to answer that question, I would say the answer is generally no, but we have seen people experiment with that and it go really well. But even like, you know, for example, our family, like we're making a bet on this. And so we bought a 2-acre place, you know, where we live and we're moving from our house and Alyssa's parents are going to live on the property, not in our house. But, so I think there's a way to do it in like a compound way. That's really fun. I've seen another family that we know that actually loved it. It's like, no, you know, the parents and the two of the married kids couldn't really afford a home. I think they were in a really expensive place, like, you know, San Francisco or something like that. It was tough for everyone, even the parents, to get kind of what they wanted. So then they all three went in together and bought like a compound themselves. And like, but there's something about it where you don't have to live together, but you do need to integrate the generations, right? Like we want our kids to know their grandparents in a really compelling way, in a really intimate way. We want the grandparents to be on the seat of wisdom for our kids. We want them to be constantly around, constantly at the head of the table, constantly sharing wisdom, constantly being asked stories. And when you do that level of integration, it's really easy and quick to see how powerful it is, how much it feels natural, how much it feels like it should be.
It gets at what I kept reading over and over throughout your book, this theme of God's design, God's heart for the family. And I'm quoting you as a multi-generational family team on mission.
That's a big mouthful. Yeah. So we break down that phrase of like, you know, when you go back to Genesis, there was a problem in Genesis, right? So God creates the Garden of Eden, but a lot of people don't realize this, but the rest of the world didn't look like Eden. So there was the Garden of Eden, but then there was still like all of Earth. And it was clear that God was kind of making a prototype, kind of like, here's a prototype of like bringing order out of chaos, but the rest of the world was still untamed, you know what I mean? It wasn't the Garden of Eden. And so there was kind of a job, like a problem of like, how do you make the rest of the world look like this, right? Now, of course, God could have solved that any way he wanted. He could have just created more. He could have just snapped his fingers, whatever. But he decided to create two humans, which is fascinating to me, right? You know, or even take a step back before that. If that was a problem that you were faced with, would that be your solution? Probably not, right? Most, like in the West, if that was our problem, we would probably create a nonprofit. We'd probably make a board of directors, or we'd probably, you know, do a bunch of venture capital and maybe create an app. I don't know, crowdsource something. God's number one answer to the untamed world that needed order was to create male plus female, put them together, and then say the job's too big for you two, so now have a bunch of babies. That was the actual solution. Like, and now go, subdue, reign, rule, multiply. That to me is so fascinating and compelling to just that idea itself that, yeah, there's a ton of implications below that. But that alone, I think, is kind of the starting point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you just laid a foundation for a big conversation, mm-hmm. which is the beauty of what God's design was. Even when we started, we're quoting Michael J. Fox and talking about family and yeah. Princess Diana. They were tapping into something I don't even know if they understood. They're tapping into that's at the heart of what God wanted family to be.
Yes.
It's more than us being consumers. He wants yeah. us to literally allow Christ in us to impact others through us.
Yeah.
Multi-generational mm-hmm. thing. I mean,
and it's I would say that yearning, I feel like we all have that yearning.
Yes.
And it's God-given.
Yeah. Yeah. But we don't feel like we know how to solve it. I feel like
exactly.
Is that,
yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't have a guitar in here today, but if I did, you'd be in trouble because I'd sing it. But the first time I heard the blessing.
Yes.
When Carrie
yes.
sang
yeah,
so the bridge, yep. I teared up. You know, yeah. may your favor be upon us.
Yeah.
And our family and yeah. our children and their children
yeah.
and their
that's just that's a scripture.
Yeah,
it's just
that,
number six.
You know, that dude, I mean, it was just like that passage in my life
yep.
coming out of a broken family to now trying to change the whole legacy.
It's amazing.
I'm tearing up going,
yeah.
that's the vision
yeah.
God has for husbands and wives and families
yep.
and our children.
I think all of us at a visceral level understand the importance, the significance, the power of a family in our lives, especially at this time of year. We think about family and just how significant it is. And when we begin to get our arms around that and understand that, we can begin to be more purposeful and intentional about strengthening and building into our own family. That's what we're all about here at Family Life, and that's what's at the heart of Jefferson Bethke's new book, Take Back Your Family. It's a book we're recommending. We have it in our Family Life Today Resource Center. You can order it from us online, or you can call 1-800-FL-TODAY. If you're looking for a book that will help you refocus and reprioritize your family, to put your family where it belongs by God's design, get a copy of the book, Take Back Your Family, by Jefferson Bethke. Go to familylifetoday.com to order your copy or call 1-800-FL-TODAY, 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. You know, when we start to get our heads and hearts wrapped around God's grand design for marriage and for family, we begin to see God's purposes more clearly. We begin to see where the power to change the world resides. It's not in a political office somewhere. It's not in a corporate boardroom. The power to change the world resides in your home, in your marriage, in your family. At Family Life, our mission is to effectively develop godly marriages and families. We believe godly marriages and families are the most significant element by God's design to change the world. And we are so grateful for those of you who share that conviction with us and those of you who express your support for what we're doing through your financial gifts. The month of December, as we've told you, is a significant month for ministries like ours. As much as 40% of the revenue we need to operate in the year ahead will come in during this month. And we have a great opportunity here in December for Family Life Today listeners to see your giving multiplied. We've had some friends of the ministry who have gotten together and agreed that they will match every donation given in December, dollar for dollar, up to a total of $1.5 million. Now, that's a steep hill for us to climb, but we're asking Family Life Today listeners, will you be as generous as you can be, knowing that whatever gift you give, it's going to be doubled because of this matching gift opportunity? And to say thank you for your gift, we'd like to send you a copy of the new devotional from the Book of Psalms by Dane Ortlund. He was a guest recently on Family Life Today. His book is called In the Lord I Take Refuge, 150 devotions from Psalms. His book is our thank you gift when you make a year-end donation and allow that donation to be matched dollar for dollar. So if you can, go online at familylifetoday.com today or call 1-800-FL-TODAY. make as generous a donation as possible. And we just want to say thank you in advance for your ongoing support of this ministry. We appreciate you. And we hope you can join us again tomorrow when Jefferson Bethke will be here again to help us dig a little deeper into what God had in mind when he created the family in the first place. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life, a Crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.